It's time for the Access of Easy podcast, the weekly technology digest that keeps you ahead of the curve. Brought to you by EasyDNS.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to the one, the only Access of Easy. This is number 309, the audio companion compendium. Every week I tell myself I'm going to look up which word is better fit there, but I never do. Anyway, it's the sidekick to the Access of Easy newsletter that you can subscribe to at accessofeasy.com. And of course, make sure you like and subscribe on YouTube to the Access of Easy YouTube page and leave a review on Apple Podcasts. You know, me and Len do another show, obviously, the CBP, and we love the reviews. I bet you, Len, that if we try, we could convince Mark to let us read a couple of reviews every week on air. I think he'd be down for that. What do you think?
I'm good with that. It's taking some of our playbook from our other show and doing it to this show, which makes sense. It's a winning strategy, and you might as well copy what works. So absolutely, I'd love to hear what some people say, good or bad, about us. Hopefully it's good.
I hope it's bad, actually. It gets me fired up. Last week, we had a quote, as always. The quote was, "You never change things by fighting the existing reality. To change something, build a new model that makes the existing model obsolete." That was by a guy named Buckminster Fuller. Len,
I have no idea who Buckminster
Fuller is. We got to rate that name. That's a five, baby. I don't think you can't get that any less than a five. Buckminster Fuller? What are we talking about?
That sounds like a 1980s wrestler to me. So I don't know. You know, I never heard that name before. And so obviously I would have never guessed. I have no idea who he is, what he did, what he's all about. But you know what? I'm going to do some searching tonight. That's going to be my evening. Thanks for ruining my evening, ladies and gentlemen. Buckminster Fuller is going to be.
I'm positive that there's like an oil painting of him somewhere. I'll tell you that much. The winner of last week's quote.
Of himself behind him? That would be the best.
100%. 100%. Yeah. I can't imagine there's any other way. So this week's quote: "Nothing can stop the man with the right mental attitude from achieving his goal. Nothing on earth can help the man with the wrong mental attitude." That's by, well, that's where you come in. Listener, viewer, you got to find out. No Googling, no searching. You know the drill. Pump it into the comment section. The winner gets their next domain or hosting renewal on EasyDNS. Can't beat
Sounds
that.
Sounds like a Spock quote.
I don't know. That's my guess. Spock, you think?
Sounds like it, but I probably don't know. Everything is not
right.
Well, from what I understand,
No,
but and every time a quote was done, it's never a fictional character that is rhymed it off. It's actually somebody that's lived and breathed on this earth. Spock has not. He's just some fictional character in Star Trek universe.
Only in your heart. Well, Len, we got, I don't know how many stories today. One, two, I think like five, something like that. Okay, let's
five plus a bonus.
We did get a little treat here from Mark. Yeah, so let's hop in. Where do you want to start?
Well, we'll do the YouTube story because it's fresh for us as well, because YouTube, they're under fire for their actions, and they've been doing a lot of this lately. James O'Keefe, his interview with RFK Jr. has been censored on YouTube because it was found to be providing what they call, quote, medical misinformation, end quote. Gotta love how they got the people over there that are probably not medical experts making these decisions. And this isn't the first time an RFK interview has been censored by that platform. In fact, two other interviews also suffered the same fate in a very recent period of time. One of these interviews was with the esteemed Jordan B. Peterson, Canadian, and the second was with a reporter named Al Gore. I don't know who he is, but he's with the New York Post from what I understand. Either way, this latest censorship resulted in the shutting down of the O'Keefe video. And then that provoked RFK. He went on the warpath, going head on with the mainstream narratives about, well, coronavirus and vaccines. And RFK also didn't take too kindly to the treatment. And he took to Twitter where he talked about freedom of speech and took shots at the Biden camp for, quote, contempt of the First Amendment, end quote. And this is due to their pressuring of Facebook to remove posts that were not favorable to Team Biden. So there seems to be a lot of censorship that is going on out there. This story in particular has to do with YouTube. And you know what? The reason why I say it's fresh for even us is, well, we got dinged on YouTube for our recent interview with Mark Morano. And with that, we're not going to be able to monetize that episode just because of what he said on there. It's too bad. This is a centralized platform. It's the biggest video streaming, video sharing site in the world. So much traffic goes through there. But there are alternatives out there that may be more favorable to a differing point of view, such as Rumble. Check that out. And there may be even others. Odyssey is another one. But nonetheless, that's a story that I have. And it's too bad YouTube is just showing their colors yet again.
The article makes a good point here that the YouTube sort of algorithm censorship regime has been basically the DNC's speech police, you know, for at least the last, I don't know, what do you think, 7 years, 2016, 2017, as soon as Trump took office, maybe a little before, maybe during the election a little bit, although a little before the election, you know, between Reddit, YouTube, and Twitter, Trump really was able to burrow his way into the minds of a lot of Americans, whether you loved them or hated them. I think the thing that bugs me more about this, Len, is that the support that this kind of stuff gets from people who fancy themselves thinkers, and not necessarily academics, but thinkers. And the guy who comes to mind for me is Sam Harris. Sam Harris, you know, has made a point on his show. I can't remember the name of the show. It might be called Waking Up, or it was called Waking Up. I forget what it's called now. But and he, you know, he's made this point on other podcasts. He was just recently on another show where he talks about how guys like Peterson and Rogan, and presumably he feels this way about RFK, are stuck in a sort of counter narrative bubble. And I don't like that term at all, but I think that YouTube probably feels the same way, that the only reason these guys feel like they're being censored is because everything they say is censored. Well, the reason everything they say is censored is because everything they say is incorrect or dangerous or fake news or whatever, or it goes against the, you know, COVID medical regime advice. You know, Len, you and me have talked about this online, offline, this show, the other show, with our friends, with our family. I don't know what sort of real estate does the quote unquote expert class think that they should be occupying online after the last few years. You know, I'm not 100% sure that there's any chance that they're ever going to, you know, have a moment of introspection and think to themselves like, hey, maybe we should kind of reevaluate our position in society. Maybe we should reevaluate the things we're doing and become experts once again. There was a time when expertise was valuable. And I don't even think it was that long ago, Len. I think that if you have, for example, like I do, I'm fortunate to have an older GP, you know, he's probably 75 or 80 years old. That guy doesn't sugarcoat anything. He doesn't recommend me medication. He doesn't do any of that stuff. You know, he tells me the things I need to hear when I go see him. And when I go see him, it's because I need to hear something. I need an expert opinion. And that those times are slowly fading away. And I think much like a roll of toilet paper, the closer we get to the end of the roll, the faster the end seems to come. And I don't know, we got to be like halfway through the toilet paper roll when it comes to the value of experts in society. Eh? Like, we got to be close to the end of where these guys can continue to plant their flag in public discourse, consequence free.
And it's not the 3-ply stuff. This is the 1-ply. And when you use it, it chafes hard. So definitely that's a good analogy. But we could move on. Let's talk about the, our astrology sign. We know it's something we would never talk about unless we're given
guidance. We should mention we get the newsletter like a day before it goes out to do the show. And it says in the post here, I don't know if it'll actually say this in the release, but it says one for Joey and Len, our podcast hosts who like to rate hacker group names. Here's a quirky name to look at which threat actor matches your astrological sign.
Yeah.
Do you even know your astrological sign? Do you know what your astro sign is? Okay.
Yeah. So Fancy Bear is the threat actor that matches with my astrological sign. So I'm going to give Fancy Bear, I'll say it's a garbage name. It's almost
a terrible name.
Yeah. It sounds like it would have been parading a little bit earlier this summer, if you ask me. It's actually a Russian military intelligence unit, and it's been doing some extensive reconnaissance operations. So they've been out there doing their thing for quite some time and targeting a lot of military operations and so forth, a lot of high profile targets. So that's nice. Fancy Bear, terrible, but it's attached to my astrological sign.
I got Venomous Bear. Are they all bear names? They are, aren't they?
Are they really?
Bear, no, you got, there's one that's like Wicked Spider. I think Venomous Bear is a little better than yours. I would give it like a 3 just because, I don't know. It's not very original, you know? Again, it sounds like if I went to Reddit and asked Reddit to create a username for me, like that's a potential outcome. So I like it, but I don't love it. And mine is for Trojanized Software, Infection of Removable Storage Devices. very strange behavior. I target aerospace and NGO. Actually, I don't mind targeting NGOs. I think NGOs could use a little targeting from time to time, if I'm being honest. Anyway, you can go to the, if you're listening on audio, go to the Access VZ newsletter and head over to the website on atlanticcouncil.org. Pretty funny. I don't know how they came up with this. Was this slow news week in hacking? Like, I don't know.
I don't know.
To talk about, but and yes, sir. Yes, maybe it
mostly
is.
Bears too. I mean, whatever. I guess that's the way the market is going, and everything is bearish these days. We can move on about Chinese hackers, and they compromise federal email accounts with stealthy and sophisticated cyber attacks. And a cyber espionage campaign by Chinese hackers has compromised numerous federal agencies and potentially hundreds of thousands of email accounts.
Can we just get that? I'm going to put that in the on StreamYard here where we do the content. There's a little thing like a soundboard. Why don't we just record you saying hundreds of thousands of government email accounts? And then you can just press that button every week, because every week there's a story about these guys getting pwned by some 3 out of 5 name hacker group from overseas. We don't need to. What are we wasting our vocal cords for? Just put it in the soundboard and rip it off.
I like this. Pack it in each week. But anyways, this incident is a significant escalation in the Chinese cyber espionage against the United States. And it highlights the needs for organizations to be vigilant about their cybersecurity posture and to patch known vulnerabilities promptly. And this is very important with this story. So these guys, as I mentioned, they compromised numerous federal agencies. And this campaign, this espionage campaign, began back in mid-May and targeted at least 24 organizations, including multiple federal agencies, such as the State Department and Department of Commerce. And the hackers, they used a vulnerability in the Microsoft Exchange servers that was patched in April, back in April 2021. But this was patched by some, apparently not everybody. I say this because there's some organizations that still have yet to install this patch, which allowed hackers to gain access to email accounts. I don't know what are these IT experts doing with these at these departments, but the hackers may have been able to access sensitive information such as classified documents, email correspondence, and contact information. However, the full extent of the data loss is yet to be known. And the incident is a significant escalation in the Chinese cyber espionage against the United States. China has been accused of carrying out a number of cyber attacks against the U.S. in recent years, including theft of sensitive government data. And the implications for this incident are serious. And again, it, as I mentioned earlier, it highlights you got to be vigilant about cybersecurity posture and patching the known vulnerabilities promptly. And it shows that even the most sophisticated organizations are not immune to cyber attacks. Now, the fact that they attacked these things and they got this information, I wonder if they're able to get some information, some insider information, so they could play the odds when they put their puts or whatever. Think about it. They're able to get this information the same time that Congress can get it, the same time the Senate can get it. And maybe they're not the only ones. Those elected officials are able to play the game. Maybe these Chinese actors are able to get this and make some real bank on the stock market. That's what I would do if I was in this position. I'd be looking to see what I should be doing, who's going to be getting some contracts, or what's going to be coming down the pipe, and take action and make bank. And with that, buy some more Bitcoin. That's what I would do.
Okay, a couple things here. Number one, Microsoft named the hacker group Storm-0558. 0 out of 5, that name. That's 0 out of 5.
I couldn't even name it that bad. It's terrible. Bad.
Two other points I want to make here, since I don't have much to add from like a technical side or technical point of view. We keep on saying every time we have this story about government agencies, about this, like there's a sentiment, and I think we were correct the first time we said it, but I've since become wiser and more hardened to this content, you know, over the last 3 or 4 months we've been doing this show. I think we got to stop calling government agencies sophisticated. Because the point we always make is that, like, if they can get the government, they can get you too. Like, I don't fucking think they could get me, honestly. You know, like, I'm pretty sure this is a difficult thing if you just update your computer. But these guys don't do it. And I honestly started laughing in the middle of the story, because as soon as you started saying exchange server, I thought, man, did we not just go over this with the token fudging on the exchange servers like last 3 weeks ago?
It was so recent.
It's every week. It's every week. Okay, so that's the second thing. Maybe they're not as sophisticated as we think. Actually, I think that's probably the case. And then the last thing, on our show, we talk about how anytime anything goes wrong, companies always blame it on market conditions. The market conditions for this show is flaw in the code. There's a flaw in the code. Something happened. There's a flaw in the code. It's your fault. It's your fault. Update the computer. Just do the stuff that Microsoft tells you to do, and you'll fix these problems before they happen. I don't understand these people, man. Like, your whole life as a retail user is on a computer. You have your whatever. You do your banking on a computer. You do your our podcast, even the Access of Easy, CBP. It's on the computer. It's online. It's whatever. Protect yourself. It doesn't take much. No one's asking you to go, you know, above and beyond. Just when Microsoft gives you the annoying thing to restart your computer for an update, schedule it to restart or restart it right there. It's not that hard. You can do it, Anon. Don't get pwned by these guys. Not even a good name. At least you're going to get got by a hacker group with a good name. Can't get got by a Dudley lock combination, for God's sake.
Master lock. So anyways, Indian threat actor Patchwork targets Chinese universities using iShell backdoor. Let's talk about iShell, the name.
It's not iShell like Apple product. It's EYE shell.
I'm gonna give it like 1.5, and I'm being generous here with this marketing.
I'm with you. I'm gonna also add that the one thing I continue to be disappointed by when we read the stories, like when I go to the stories for the newsletter, for the podcast, the like thumbnail open source pictures they use all the time of like a kid in a hoodie with a computer with like glittering code around him. We got to find new stock photos for hacking. This is an industry that's ready to take off. We can't keep using the same photos, guys. We got to do better.
Just wait for Elizabeth Warren to release her anti-crypto army, and there's going to be something included in the pamphlet that she's going to be handing out. Maybe you can scan that and use that.
Same two pictures, three pictures. Like, what? Why is this? Why are we doing this? I don't understand.
Anyways, this Patchwork hacking crew, they're suspected to be a threat that operates on behalf of India. This is very interesting. The group has been targeting universities and research organizations in China with a backdoor named iShell. And iShell is a custom implant that is used to gain persistence on infected systems. And the Patchwork hackers have been also known to use a spear phishing and waterhole attacks to target their victims. And spear phishing, talked about it on our show not too long ago, it's a type of phishing attack that targets specific individuals or organizations, typically through malicious emails. And the goal of the spear phishing is to steal sensitive information such as login credentials or infect a target's device with malware. And the waterhole attack, it's not a waterboard, it's a waterhole attack, is a cyber attack targeting a particular organization in which malware is installed on a website or websites regularly visited by the organization's members in order to infect computers used within the organization itself. So it's a very, very sophisticated way of attacking organizations. Well, this Patchwork group, they've been involved, they're very active since looks like December 2015 when they were first noted. That's a very long time that they've been around. Mm-hmm. But they have been narrowly focusing on China and Pakistan. And they're considered to be a sophisticated threat group, and their activity is a reminder of the importance of cybersecurity. Now, the question I have is, why are they going after China? And granted, China might have a lot of information that other countries may want to get, but it seems to me, more than anything, they are strategic allies. Ultimately, they would be on other sides of the fence, but just based on where they are and the way things are growing with BRICS nations and the fall of the US dynasty, it seems like to me that India and China would be buddy-buddy for at least for a little while before they decide to cut their friendship short. So this cyber attack, this group targeting China through India, I don't know if this is going to strain relations moving forward. I doubt it, but it just seems like there's going to be something here that could potentially be used later on as a way to cut ties with each other. What are your thoughts?
I think there's two things to note here. One is that Meta disclosed it took down 50 accounts on Facebook and Instagram operated by these guys. The other thing is that this, once again, is relying on social engineering. So it sounds to me like they have to actually convince a person on the other end of the attack to grant permissions of some kind via, I don't know, you know, maybe something like remote viewer or something of that nature where you can just do remote access to make this work. So again, I mean, we're kind of entering into a stage now. It seems to me anyway, like a phase where you're either sophisticated enough to do this and not get caught, or if you get caught, it's because, I shouldn't say if you get caught, if you're compromised, it's because you made a mistake in the social aspect. Most devices, I know you me don't quite see eye to eye on this, but generally speaking, I think like if you have an Apple iPhone, you're probably good as far as security, unless you give something up to somebody, your PIN or your iCloud password, whatever. You know, if you have a Mac or PC or a Linux laptop or desktop, probably you're okay unless you give up your password or cloud, you know, cloud server information or whatever that leads back to your machine. So we're seeing this more and more. I think, Len, it might be time to start adding, you know, I'd also like to know, it doesn't really say this here, but I can't imagine, like, at least in my personal view, I have a hard time imagining somebody my age getting hit by something like this. And I even have a hard time, like, you're a little older than me, but I have a hard time imagining basically anybody under 50 getting hit by something like this. It seems to me unlikely that this would be easy to do to someone who grew up around tech. And yet, it seems like every week, kind of buried in these stories, the answer is always similar. Like, either you gave up the information, or you downloaded something you shouldn't have downloaded, or you opened a PDF that had an executable baked in or something, and this is the result all the time. So how do you fix this, right? It doesn't seem like there's a lot of ingenuity on the part of these groups, just that they're finding new targets, right? Like finding fertile ground for the scam. That's really what it boils down to, does it not?
It's stupidity, and people, either they're unable to be trained or they choose not to be trained in order to spot these type of attacks and to avoid them. A spear phishing attack might be sophisticated in its approach, but if somebody sends me something, even if it looks very legitimate, I'm not willingly clicking on stuff that's been sent to my email box. I'm looking at it and I'm going to inspect it as much as possible before I take any action. A lot of people, I don't think, do that, and they see something seems rather legit, they click on it, and boom, it's done. At that point, the door's open and the horse has left the barn. So I think people need to be trained, or I think people are just untrainable, which is the reality of it. But that's my point of view. I could be totally wrong, and I'd like to be proven wrong, actually. I'd like to see, to see that maybe people can actually adapt, but what the heck.
For sure.
Anyways, let's talk about the FBI, and some interesting stuff going on over there. They were, an unknown government agency. It was the FBI here that was violating the U.S. Commerce Department's entity list by purchasing spyware from the Israel company NSO. NSO has created a whole bunch of backdoors, including a lot of zero days, from what I understand, for iPhones, Android, and so forth. So nasty stuff coming out of the NSO group. Well, the FBI purchased the spyware from this group, known as Landmark was the name of the software, back in November of 2021. And this happened just days after the Biden administration placed NSO on the entity list. This means that the U.S. companies were prohibited from doing business with NSO. I guess not the FBI, because the FBI used Landmark to track people in Mexico without their knowledge or consent. And the spyware allowed the FBI to collect data from targets' phones, including their location, text messages, and emails. Who's using text messages these days? I guess a lot of people still are. Anyways, the FBI's purchase of Landmark was a violation of the entity list, and it raised concerns that the government's use of surveillance technology. And the FBI said that it used Landmark for legitimate law enforcement purposes. Yeah, right. But critics have argued that the spyware could be used to violate people's privacy. I tend to agree with that. So the FBI's investigation into the purchase of the Landmark is still ongoing. It's unclear whether any charges will be filed, but yeah, this was first reported back by the New York Times just last month in July 2023, and they've been using it to track people who are suspected involved with drug trafficking and other serious crimes. I suspect probably more than that. NSO Group, it's a very controversial company, and they've been accused of selling spyware to a variety of governments out there that could potentially even violate human rights. And the entity list is a tool that the U.S. government used to restrict trade with companies, but it looks like they got around this. They decided, you know what, the heck with this. We're not going to deal with this entity list. We're too good for it. So a lot of red flags here. I don't like it at all.
Where do you even start with the red flags? This is like the pointing Spider-Man meme. These guys are just catching each other, doing the wrong thing over and over again. Again, I'm not going to add too much to this, but I just want to reiterate what you said. There is no legitimate use for these tools against citizens, and this is all they're used for, okay? They might tangentially be used against countries, but at the end of the day, you know, they're targeting individuals. And if the stuff works, then you're going to find more and more that stories like this come out where they're being used in ways that are unsavory, probably unconstitutional, probably illegal. And the laws continue to be twisted up like a melted piece of licorice to make this okay. And everyone pushes it under the rug. And, you know, we indict Trump for the 8th time this week and get rid of the story. And it, I mean, you know, I'm not going to go on this tangent. Maybe I'll save it for our show, but we're looking more and more. I say we're, I'm not an American, obviously, but we're looking more and more like banana republics in the first world. Like the laws only matter sometimes for some people, some parts of the year, in some industries, for some companies.
Targeting ex-presidents.
Like, come on. Like, what are we talking about? It's disappointing, right? But again, not surprising. So prepare, man. Like, get ahead of this stuff. But start taking your security, privacy, and all that stuff seriously. Get off text messages. Like, I can't believe people are text messaging still. You're absolutely right. I haven't sent an SMS message with any, like, personal information in at least 2 years. There's just no need. Like, there's no reason to ever be on that wavelength with people. Like, it's well known that anything you send in a text is basically public info. You know, it's not hard to grab it at all. Remember there was that story, I can't remember if we were talking about this at work or something back in the day, but that the Hamilton Police Department, where I'm from, was using like basically these things that just attach to traffic poles and could pick off text messages and phone calls. With a warrant, of course. Yes, sharks. I'm pretty sure they're called sharks, something of that nature, or dolphins. Yeah, completely insane. And that story just disappeared. I doubt very much that those things are out of the picture. Like I don't know exactly what they look like anymore. But anyway, this stuff is everywhere. Get ahead of it. Don't worry when these guys tell you they're not doing it anymore. We know very well that they are. So just keep that in mind.
Let's talk about WormGPT. We've talked about this before. I'm pretty sure.
Did we rate it? Has it improved? I mean, this isn't really a strong draft class for hacker names this week, so I'm going to give this one the better
2.8.
ones. Yeah, I'm going to go 3. I think again, middle of the road for me, just above. Yeah,
yeah, it's not strong. It's on the weaker side, but yeah, anyways, WormGPT. It's a generative AI tool that has been developed by cyber criminals to launch business email compromise attacks (BEC). So BEC attacks are a type of email fraud where the attacker impersonates a legitimate person or organization in order to trick the victim into providing sensitive information or making a payment. It almost sounds on the lines of a spear phishing attack, but not exactly like that, but very similar. So the WormGPT is designed to generate highly convincing emails that are difficult to distinguish from legitimate emails. The tool is trained on data set of malware related data. I'd love to get that data set and take a look at it. And this allows it to generate emails that are both realistic and persuasive. Well, SlashNext, it's a cybersecurity firm, recently tested the WormGPT by using it to generate an email intended to pressure an unsuspecting account manager into paying a fraudulent invoice. The result of the test were, quote, unsettling. And according to SlashNet, so that's according to them, they're saying it's unsettling. WormGPT, it produced an email that was not only remarkably persuasive, but also strategically cunning, showcasing its potential for sophisticated phishing and BEC attacks. And the development of WormGPT is a sign of a growing threat posed by generative AI technologies to businesses and individuals. As these technologies become more sophisticated, they will make it easier for cyber criminals to launch convincing and targeted attacks. So yeah, it's something that's interesting here. It's based on the GPTJ language model, which was developed by OpenAI. It's available for purchase on the dark web. So if you're in that, you could buy it, but I don't recommend it. And this could be some very nasty stuff if it's given or the wrong people have it in their hands. And it could probably even make the most basic of cyber criminals a lot more potent in their attacks. So AI, it's helped a lot of people, but in this case, it's going to probably hurt a lot of people moving forward. And it's not just losing jobs. It could be sensitive data too.
I really like this story, and I'll tell you why. We've seen over the last, and I believe we spoke about it last week, over the last few months, the quality of GPT-4, like OpenAI's LLM product, completely fall off a cliff. People are saying the results are not as good, the hallucinations are getting worse. And I think part of that, the reason for that is because when you're relying on, you know, the masses, that is the masses in the sense of, you know, Isaiah's job. That's a short story or an article from The Atlantic you should read if you haven't read before. The masses are kind of the midwits on the bell curve. And the masses don't know whether or not the data they get and the response they get is good or bad. And so you get this kind of mixed bag when it comes to accuracy and ways to improve when you rely on user feedback to tell you whether or not something was a good response. You know where you don't have that problem? When the responses are driven by when the quality is based on the results. And in Worm, if you can convince someone to make a payment, I am making one assumption here, and it's that Worm knows when it's been successful. Let's assume it's a Bitcoin payment, for example. If a wallet trips, a certain amount of Bitcoin, then that goes into the data set as a win. Whatever that sequence of events was, however that conversation went, however that email exchange went, that's a win. And the losses just don't get added to the data set or don't carry the same weight in the data set or start to be phased out of the data set, whatever. And so after a while, you have this really finely tuned set of, I wouldn't call them attack vectors, but set of utilities, language utilities that work on people that are in that, you know, in the midwit area of the bell curve, the bell curve meme, and they're running small accounts or running, like, you know, they're kind of mid-management in a corporate structure, have access to payments and you know, sending in, or paying invoices, and also don't really have to answer for the middle of the road kind of costs, right? And so before you know it, you have this pretty nice data set where everything you've done to get into the data set means that you were able to deliver a payment on the back end. I think that's pretty good. That's a good way to do things. GPT-4 doesn't have that option. No one can show you whether or not the GPT app gave you something of value, because people who use it, broadly speaking, don't know, I think. And so that data set mechanism is really different in between those two. I want to learn more about this. And I GPT, OpenAI, and all those language models, those large language models, need to start using this, because as those language models get worse, they're also becoming more prevalent. And so they're going to be learning from each other's bad answers over some period of time. And then what do you do? Worm is going to look like, this kind of beacon on the hill if this continues. And it seems to me that it's doing at least that data collection really effectively. And I can't imagine why it wouldn't be effective. It makes sense in my head. I don't know. What do you think? Do I have that right?
Oh, can we socialize it in such a way that Worm GPT would be able to share the data with the ChatGPT that way, that everything is, that's the way it's done in real life. So we're trying to lift up the lowliest people out there. So let's lift up the lowest common denominator with respect to AI. But it goes to show you, if the Worm GPT is, and you get instant feedback and you're able to provide that if it works, and it gets more and more fine-tuned moving forward, the people that it's targeting, the people in the middle of the bell curve, like I said earlier, they're either untrained or unable to be trained. So if it's going to be attacking them and it's working, hey, man, it's just proving the fact that people are just dumb, and generally they're dumb, and they're very trusting in nature. They see something, as long as it's appealing to them or gives them a shortcut to whatever they're doing, yes, I'll click on it, and boom, it's done. It's like, oh, wow. Yeah. But in this case,
because almost like by default, right? Like, I don't want to drag this out, but I'm kind of thinking about this more as I'm talking to you now. Almost by default, if you go to GPT for a response, by default, you don't know whether the response is right, because if you knew what the response was, you wouldn't be there. And so you just keep feeding this thing garbage feedback about whether it's good or bad, because you don't know. Otherwise, you wouldn't be there. And so only people who don't know end up there. And then what? It's just only people who don't know giving the feed. That doesn't make sense.
Well, Glenn, that number's growing.
I got to call Sam Altman. Does he know this? I got to tell him.
He's busy scanning people's retinas out there. I just have to say, though, that number of people, they are growing. How many people out there are relying on AI for relationships? Sure. Not just for quote-unquote human interaction, which is not, but even for their love life and stuff like that. It's incredible that people are relying on this to fill gaps that could easily be filled just by walking outside the door and interacting with people. But this is something you're using more and more, and that number is growing. And if it appeals to this group of people, and it just, as long as they're able to use it and be sucked in, doesn't matter if it's appealing to the people that are on the outside. The people on the inside that is in their basement, kind of like me right now. But that's who it's trying to capture. And you know what? That's basically it. And it's too bad. This world is heading in the wrong direction. This AI stuff could have been so much better, but it's being used for all the wrong things.
Have you seen the movie? This is like the Access of Easy after show. Have you seen the movie Her? Came out about 10 years ago with Joaquin Phoenix, and he's like in a relationship with like this AI bot that just lives in a little chip in his ear.
Never even heard of it.
It was weird at the time. I want to rewatch it because of exactly what you just said. I think I would view that in different lens now. Anyways, that was Access of Easy number 309. Make sure you like and subscribe on YouTube and leave a review on Apple Podcasts. If you leave one, we'll read it. Even if Mark says no, we'll read it because we can just go to Apple Podcasts and see the reviews and we'll read them anyway. So
I can't. I don't have the ability to go there.
Oh, I'll go there.
I'm the outside looking in.
What do you mean? You can't see on Apple Podcasts. You don't have the app? Anyway, we'll figure it out.
I don't have the operating system to run that. You need an iOS to run that. I don't have it. So
I'll find a review. If you leave a review, I'll find it and I'll read it. Anyways, take care. See you next week for number 310.